Hello, folks, and welcome to the last of our podcasts on the statistics material we are covering in this course, Stats for the Social Sciences. We're wrapping up our conversations with regression analysis, also known as linear regression, or if there's a lot of variables involved, multiple regression. But all that said, really what we're talking about is kind of going old school. If you remember college algebra or even high school algebra, how we used to kind of fit a line to a bunch of dots, well, that's exactly what we're talking about today. In fact, that is what regression is fitting a line to our data to be able to predict using any number of measures what our outcome is going to be. And we're going to take a slightly different approach than the past few weeks. Instead of thinking about groups, we're just straight thinking about variables. And how one particular independent variable, or maybe a set of them, affects a dependent variable. So this is the bread and butter of our conversation. If you'll go ahead and open up the slides, we are on the week 14 roadmap page, and we're looking at the linear regression slides. We've only got about 20 some to get through today, including kind of the summary slides or the section headers. So this conversation should take us probably around 30 minutes total, including some discussion of the remaining assignments, some last minute guidance on items like the SPSS assignments, which you'll be able to wrap up after this conversation, and then just a smidge more about the final paper and a few minutes or a few points on the final exam. I will be posting another brief episode regarding the final exam and how that's all going to work, so today's conversation is going to be a little bit on the short side with that, at least. All right, let's dive right in. So, as I noted before, we're talking now about variables, specifically independent and dependent variables. This kind of takes us back to, let's say, correlation, right? When we're thinking about how two things move together, and frankly, that's really the best framing for what regression is. It's that fitting a line. So slide four here is pulling up those images that we looked at for, let's say, describing a strong positive correlation, a strong negative correlation, or a weak positive or weak negative correlation. Now, the way this is portrayed is pretty simple. We create a scatter plot for our two variables, the x variable and the y variable, and then we draw a line that gets as close to the dots as is reasonably possible. And that, functionally, is regression. It's when the statistical program that we're using tries to draw the best line that comes the closest to each of the dots in our scatter plot, when, that is, we have just two variables that we're looking at, and tries to minimize the error. So the error term is pictured on slide five. The error term is the distance between that line and any one of those dots. We're trying to make the distance between those dots and that line as small as humanly possible. Now, weirdly, this is going to be called something like residuals when you get to SPSS, but think about it as the space between each of our dots and the line that we draw. And regression is just the computer saying, what's the best line that I can draw with the least distance between that line and every one of those dots? That's what we mean when we're saying it's minimizing the errors. The distance between the dots that we have and the line that we have, we're going to minimize those errors. The formula in math speak is a lot like, again, what you would have seen in the past for something like algebra. So slide six gives us our formula. Our dependent variable, listed here as y sub I, equals the population intercept, that beta sub zero, plus the population slope coefficient times the independent variable, beta sub one times x sub I, plus the random error term, e sub I. Okay, that's a lot of what sounds like crazy kind of weirdo speak. And truly it is, again, another language. Math is its own language. We have to translate. But essentially what this says is whatever your dependent variable is some sort of calculation in relation to your independent variable, plus where it crosses the y-axis, that population intercept, and then it's going to be a little bit off because our predictions usually aren't perfect. So that's where the error term comes in. The linear component is identified as the intercept plus the coefficient times the independent variable. And then there's the random error component, because again, rarely do we have data sets where the line fits perfectly to all of our dots. And it gets more confusing as we add in more variables. So this, the regression model in Math Talk on slide 6, is when we have simple linear regression where there's only one independent variable. But I could add more independent variables here. So it'd be like beta sub 2 times x 2i. Or beta sub 3 times x3i, there's a lot we can throw into here. And it'd be something like, okay, how much does your test score relate to, let's say, hours of studying? That hours of studying would be your one independent variable, but we know that studying isn't the only thing that affects test scores. Maybe you have high test anxiety, and that can influence the score or make it hard for you to sleep. So when you got to the exam, you weren't feeling your best. We might be thinking about all of those factors: level of test anxiety, number of hours of studying, how you're actually physically feeling at the exam. All of those would be independent variables that could affect that dependent variable of test score. And when we introduce numerous variables, that's when it gets really complicated. For algebra, we generally just stick with kind of the simple format, y equals x plus some number to give us y. And we work backwards to figure it out from there. Straight algebra, honestly, that's how we would calculate it. But multiple regression, where we have more than one independent variable, it's super complicated to try and fit a line through that, which is generally why we let statistics programs do that work. It's a great thing for SPSS to step in and help us with. Now, what I've just described, visually speaking, is presented on slide 7. And here, the dependent variable is, let's say, your income, symbolized by the stacked coins. Generally speaking, the amount of hours that you work, well, that's the best predictor of your income, right? Or your paycheck. However many hours times your rate per hour gives you your income. But of course, we know that other things can affect that. Let's say your level of education. In the multiple linear regression picture on the right-hand side of slide 7, you see that little diploma. So level of education might be affecting your income because it affects your rate of pay. Yes, your time worked does affect your income, but what about maybe sickness or illness, or maybe you're facing some sort of physical challenges that limit your ability to contribute time? Well, in a multiple linear regression, we might consider education and the amount of time you work, plus any other factors that might be affecting your ability to be productive or complete the work. And all of these things could affect your income. So simple regression, one independent variable with one dependent variable. Multiple linear regression is multiple independent variables, more than one, with one dependent variable. All right, let's go back to the math speak, the formula that you see listed on slide 6. Beta sub 1, the population slope coefficient, is really just kind of the slope of your line. And that regression coefficient and how we understand it is explained on slide 8. A regression coefficient tells you how much a 1-unit increase in your independent variable affects the dependent variable. So how much change in your independent variable, and what level of change does that produce in your dependent variable? So if I had a coefficient of 0.5, meaning I change my independent variable by 1, that turns into a 0.5 change in my dependent variable. Let's go back to my example of studying and, you know, score on an exam. If I increase my minutes studied by 1 and my coefficient is 0.5 for that independent variable, it means one more minute studied gets me 0.5 points on my exam score. And it's a positive increase because my 0.5 is a positive number. So one more minute of study equals a 0.5-point increase in my exam score or my dependent variable. The way that will look in SPSS is going to appear like what you see on slide 9. You see the coefficients listing. Well, coefficients is one of the tables that SPSS produces when you run a regression analysis. So the coefficients table is telling you just how much, again, that change, the one unit change in one of your independent variables, turns into as far as a change in your dependent variable. So in the orange boxes on this screen are my independent variables, years in business and level of education. And beneath the coefficients table, or at the bottom of it, you see what my dependent variable is. It's the number of homes sold. So what I'm looking at for this equation, or for the question, is, well, how many years in business and level of education, in terms of what level of education, what does that mean as far as how many homes I sell? This is really kind of thinking about being a realtor. So if a realtor has been in business for a long time and they have a certain level of education, how do we figure out how much that means in terms of their ability to sell houses? The constant in the green is that y-intercept, or where our line crosses the y-axis when the independent variables are at zero. So if I have 0 years in business and zero level of education, I'm still supposed to sell around 9.7 houses, at least according to the way this has calculated everything. Now that constant is going to be added. If you go back again, flashback over to slide 6, the population intercept is the B sub 0. That is what we add to our coefficient times the independent variable, or in this case, the coefficients, plural, times our two independent variables, those being years in business and level of education. So at the bottom of slide 9, I've written out the explanation for each coefficient. For years in business, 0.766 as my coefficient means for every additional year in business, I sell 0.766 more homes. So I sell more homes the longer I've been in business. With level of education being negative 0.7, it actually means for one more level of education, an increase of one level of education, I sell fewer homes. And the number fewer is 0.7 fewer. It's a negative number, so it would take away from my total number of homes sold. Now, you're going to interpret these numbers in the same way as correlations, except the numbers can be bigger than 1 or smaller than negative 1. So a positive coefficient means as your independent variable increases, so does your dependent variable. And the negative means that as your independent variable increases, your dependent variable decreases. Now, in the end, what we're looking at with this equation and all the parts to it, which I've put in the green and the orange on slide 10, and you can connect that back with slide 9, we're going to use this information to actually make predictions. That's the real value of linear regression. We're not simply able to say whether something is significant, which you can see in the sig column on the right-hand side of the coefficients table, but we can also tell just how much it's affecting and changing our dependent variable. With things like a t-test or an ANOVA, you do have to figure out effect sizes, and you can do that. Coefficients really are our effect sizes, and it's calculated for us right away, which is quite nice. And it's generally easier to understand because, again, it's a linear relationship. So as one increases, the other increases, or as one increases, the other decreases, we can exactly think about that line and the way the line is moving. Is it moving up and to the right or down and to the right? So let's practice this. Moving to slide 11, how would I predict the number of homes sold? Well, the calculation, the formula, is listed in that orange box. It would be 9.742 plus 0.766 times the number of years that person or that realtor has been in business, and then subtract 0.7 times the level or years of education. It would be level of education, but we don't tend to think of education in terms of levels. We tend to think of years. So the reason I subtract that level of education is because my coefficient there is negative. I could also say plus negative 0.7 times level of education or years. I hope that this discussion is making sense, but let's practice it. So I want you to email me and tell me. Let's say you've been in business for 5 years and you have a level 2 education. Exactly how many houses are you predicted to sell as a realtor? Again, that's 5 years in business with a level 2 education. Fill in the formula and do the calculation and email me. What do you get? Okay, once you've done that, let's actually go back and look at this table again, because it's really important to be able to understand what the rest of the table is saying. Under the unstandardized coefficients, again, that's our calculations, our numbers, our slope of our line, basically, for those things. We don't worry too much about the standard error, but the standard error is kind of like, again, standard deviation. We're thinking about what's the possibility in terms of our numbers being off from whatever we get for this coefficient. Is it pretty close? Is it pretty widely varied? How are we seeing the variance around that coefficient? I'd set aside the standardized coefficients beta column for now. If you're someone who's going to be going into more advanced statistics, maybe getting a degree in psychology at the graduate level or any number of social sciences, that's going to be a more important thing for you to understand and consider, but we're going to set it aside for now. The T in that coefficients column is kind of like a t-test. It's basically what's the value on, let's say, a normal distribution, and is it close to the average? We use the sig column to figure out if it's close to the average, and that sig column is something we interpret in the exact same way as the sig column for an ANOVA, or the p-value columns in a z-score test, a one-sample z-test, or a one-sample t-test, or the t-test tables. It's supposed to be something we look at and say, okay, if it is below 0.05 for that sig value, then we're going to say that that independent variable, it's going to have an effect on our dependent variable. There's something going on here that's different from chance, or our chances of getting this are really, really low if it's truly just dumb luck that's the relationship between those two variables. When I look in that sig column on slide 11, I see for my constant 0.475. We never worry about explaining or interpreting the constant. It's just where the line crosses the y-axis when everything in x is at zero. Okay, so set that one aside and don't worry about the sig there, although it is pointing out that if it was a coefficient for us, it wouldn't be significant. It wouldn't have statistical significance because it is much greater than 0.05. Of our two independent variables, only one of them is below 0.05 as far as the sig column goes, the years in business. When we look at level of education, the sig there is 0.553. So in all, what we would say is level of education doesn't do a good job of predicting how many homes you sell. And it's probably something we shouldn't even include in our equation. Therefore, we would really just use years of business to try and figure out how many homes you sell. We would drop level of education based on the fact that it is much greater than 0.05 in that sig column. So we'd have to accept the null hypothesis there that level of education does not affect the number of homes sold. But for years in business, it very much does affect that. So we'd want to be thinking about years in business as a good predictor of number of homes sold, but level of education is not. Now again, in our entire equation, we would use the numbers we've calculated, but honestly, that equation should just drop years of education or level of education because it's not good at predicting our results. So this is how we would interpret that entire coefficients table. I have one statistically significant independent variable, years in business, based on the sig column value being below 0.05. And then I would take my coefficient to calculate my prediction for number of homes sold. The equation, if I were to drop my insignificant variables, my insignificant independent variables, would be 9.742 plus 0.766 times the number of years in business to give me how many houses I would be predicted to sell. All right, that's a lot to process there, but I want you to walk through that table and make sure that you understand the unstandardized coefficients beta or capital B column and the sig column. That significance, that's going to be important for you to be able to explain and understand, especially when it comes to SPSS assignment 4 and our final exam. With that said, we've covered the basics of linear regression for the most part, but there is one other thing we should be looking at when we get our SPSS results. There is a table included where it's going to talk about the model fit, or how well does our line fit to our dots in our scatter plot, or the dots that we're going to be placing for all of our different independent variables versus our dependent variable. That model fit is going to be described in terms of what's called R squared, the coefficient of determination. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, this is the exact same thing that we talked about when we talked about, again, correlation. Because correlation is about how well a line fits. How well do two things move together, or how well do they not move together? How well do they move apart? How much do they match or mismatch one another? And that's really what's at the heart of the coefficient of determination. So that R squared value is going to be in your SPSS results. Let's take a look at those results now. Go ahead and open up SPSS, and I want you to navigate to finding Chapter 16, Dataset 3, which is the dataset I've been using to model to you at this point in time. It's number of homes sold, years in business, and level of education that are our variables. You can find Chapter 16, Dataset 3 if you go to the Modules page. And on the Modules page, you're going to look under Textbook Datasets. Scroll down to the very bottom of the Textbook Datasets list and click on Chapter 16, Dataset 3, which will open up a page to link you to where the dataset is. Click on the Download Chapter 16, Dataset 3 blue link at the top, and it will download it to your computer. And then once it's downloaded, click it to open it up in SPSS. If you have SPSS already open, it should open the dataset for you right away. And then what you'll see, it'll give you the two screens that pop up. The first one that pops up is always the output screen where it gives you kind of a warning error. Go ahead and close that out. And then you should get to the data editor screen with three columns. Column one, number of homes sold. Column two, years in business. Column three, level of education. To run a regression in SPSS, simply click on the Analyze command, scroll down to Regression, and then we're going to choose the second option in that list, Linear. Linear is going to give us a pop-up box for linear regression. We're going to move number of homes to the dependent box, and then we're going to click on years in business, move that to the independent box below it, click on level of education, move that to the independent box as well, and now we simply hit OK. And our output is going to give us a set of different tables. The first table is the variables entered or removed, where it shows our independent variables listed level of education and years in business. And then beneath that, our dependent variable of number of homes sold. The B point below says all requested variables were entered, so it kept all of them in our equation. The second table is called model summary, and this is where we can find our R squared. R is the R value, the correlation value, the 0.864, and then the R square is literally under the R square column, the third one over. You have model, then R square, and the R square here is 0.747. What that R squared is saying is that about 75% of what's going on in our dependent variable, of the change in our dependent variable, is accounted for by the change in our independent variables. Or in other words, whatever changes we're seeing in our independent variables, that level of education in those years in business, is explaining 75% of what's going on with our dependent variable of homes sold. That's incredibly good. That means most of what's going on with our homes sold is explained by those factors. So we don't really have to worry about we're missing too much here. That is fundamentally what the R squared means, the explained variation in the dependent variable that's due to the variation that's going on in your independent variables. And it's a ratio. going back to our slide, slide 12, it's the explained variation over the total variation. So 0.747 is 74.7%, almost 75%. The table beneath that table in your regression results is an ANOVA. Now, what's really confusing about this is you won't want to include this in your results. The ANOVA is a weird calculation in a regression where it's actually testing the regression itself, the formula that you put in, and then the errors. The regression is that regression line. That's our values for our independent variables. Residual, that line, is our errors. The ANOVA in this case has an F value or an F test score of 25.1 and the sig is less than 0.001. What this table tells us is that our regression, our factors, our independent variables are very good at being predictive of our dependent variable, and they're much better than what's left for the errors. It's saying our line is a good fit, but we already got that from the model summary. And then the last table in the set of four for this regression results is our coefficients table, which should match what you've seen in the slides already. When doing this kind of work, what you want to include in your results that helps you explain what's going on is certainly the model summary table and the coefficients table. You have four tables total: the variables entered, the model summary, the ANOVA, and the coefficients. For SPSS assignment 4, I would like you to complete that question and submit the model summary table and the coefficients table. That's going to cover everything you really need to explain in relation to the questions for that assignment. Okay, having done that one practice, let's practice again. Go to page 283 and let's walk through the using SPSS to compute the regression line, that practice problem. And it's going to take you through the same steps that I just did in this podcast. Only you're going to be working with Chapter 16, Dataset 1, which is a simple linear regression with only one independent variable and one dependent variable. If you ever forget the steps, you can always go to these sections in the chapter called Using SPSS to Compute, and it's going to walk you through how to do that in SPSS. Here, it's taking you through regression. So the steps are listed out for you, and it's going to take you through additional things, whereas it gives you the chance to practice drawing the regression line, which is more than what we did in our practice just now. It's a good chance to really examine what SPSS can do and how it can help you. And if you run into problems or you get results that are different than what you see pictured on page 284 and 285, let me know. And we will work together to try and identify ways to collaborate and involve ourselves in the steps where things might have gone a little wonky. Once you've done that practice problem, and you've hopefully practiced already with me on Chapter 16, Dataset 3, go ahead and move into SPSS Assignment 4. It's only one question, so all you have to submit is a regression, and when you are done working through that, get it into Canvas, and you can call it good on all of your SPSS assignments. SPSS 4 is one question. It's just a regression question, or I should say it's a subset of questions because there's obviously multiple parts to it, but it's a little bit simpler than SPSS Assignment 3. Assignment 3 takes us through a one-sample test, t-tests, and an ANOVA, but Assignment 4? Just a regression. And so it's got multiple independent variables. It's a multiple linear regression. You can see all of what you need to see, hopefully on page 291, and it's in chapter 16. Now, one important note I will include in this podcast that I can't remember if I've talked about before, your textbook actually includes all of the answers to all of the assignment questions that I've given you from the book in the back. It's in Appendix D, where it lists all the answers to every practice question. Now, I need to give you some warning here. In your textbook for the practice question that we're looking at, question 7 on page 291, the answer in the back of the book is wrong. It's 100% wrong. I'm not really sure how they got it so wrong, but I've practiced this question for the last 3 years, and I don't know how to say it other than I don't know what they got or why they got what they got. So if you go to Appendix D and you look for the answer to Chapter 16, Question 7, you're gonna find something that does not line up with what I have found. What I have found is that the answer is actually 87.118, and I've listed that on slide 15. If you don't get 87.118, please let me know. Otherwise, if you get that calculation, please know you're right, the back of the book is wrong, and go ahead and submit that assignment. Okay, that wraps our conversation on regression, and really what I wanted to talk about with SPSS assignment number 4. What's left for us is our final paper and our final exam. For that final paper, if you haven't got instructions from me and a fake data set, or if you haven't sent me your real data, you need to do that right away, because those are the measures I'm going to use to grade your final papers. You'll need to update your data and hypotheses sections, particularly if you have a fake data set, you need to rewrite the data section. Your findings and results should be based on what you have for instructions for the final paper. I've written out descriptive statistics instructions as well as explanations of what you need to do as far as tests in your final paper. You might need to do t-tests or an ANOVA or multiple ANOVAs or a regression or some combination of all three. All of those need to be included in the final paper for you to earn full points, and then you'll use what you learn from your fake dataset results to write your conclusion. And that conclusion should be the answer to your research question roughly from your fake or real data based on the results that you get in your findings and results. The final paper must have both descriptive statistics and inferential statistics. And you can find all of those instructions by going to the final paper instructions and datasets page, clicking on the inferential statistics instructions link in about the middle of the page, and be sure to use the fake data set that I've created for you or the real data that you have sent me. The remaining slides on the paper are going through the data and hypotheses description for the final paper and the findings and results. If you have any concerns or questions about what is listed there, I want you to email me right away. Make sure you don't just include the tables for the findings and results, but you also describe what's listed in those tables. And I've given some examples, let's say again in these slides, for slide 20 shows the findings and results section description, so the descriptive statistics. I've got an example on that slide from a past paper, something like a crosstabs listing, and you'll have crosstabs listed for your instructions. That means crosstabulations, showing a table of how many different frequencies we see of something, or how often do two variables cross over with one another. We generally use cross-tabulation tables with what are called string variables in SPSS. And those are actually just text variables. We don't use numbers for them. For numbers, we would do frequencies, as again, laid out on slide 20. You can see a crosstabs table example on slide 21, and frequencies is going to be more like a listing of what you see on slide 20. But generally what I'm going to expect is that you're going to include measures like your mean, your median, and your mode. When you have concerns about this, make sure you use the instructional documents. I've got both your inferential statistics instructions and your descriptive statistics instructions. So hopefully you're finding all the links on that final paper instructions page. If you're not, and you are unclear on what needs to be done, please, please, please don't suffer in silence or wail in agony. Just email me, and that will make things a lot easier. One final point about the final papers. A lot of you are going to have instructions on needing to transform your data. Again, there are going to be instructions for that on that final paper datasets and instructions page, and it's really in that middle section. The middle section of the page has three different links: descriptive statistics instructions, inferential statistics instructions, and how to transform data. This is all pictured on slide 23. Go to that space, that spot, and use those to guide you through the process. Last notes for today. We have a final exam. That final exam will be taking place on December 11th or by December 11th. I'm going to open up the final exam for all of you on December 8th if you want to complete it early. You'll have a 2-hour window to finish the exam, and the questions are going to fall into 3 sections. So you're only going to have to write 3 responses for this test. The sections are test determination and critical values, comparing groups, and linear regression, as you see pictured on slide 24. The structure of the final exam will be the same as the midterm. Each section will have 2 questions. You answer one of the 2 questions, and you submit your responses on Canvas in the time that you are given. There's not much more for me to say on the exam right now. I will give some, again, supporting notes, I guess, is what you'd call them, as far as guidance with the final, but really, because it's so like the midterm, I would say do whatever helped you succeed on the midterm. And if you didn't succeed on the midterm and you have a lot of concerns, you know you can always reach out and I will be here to assist as best I can. All right, everybody, that does it for me today. I hope you all have a great rest of your day, week, weekend, whatever you got going on. And I really want to say thank you for slogging through this course. I know there are definitely times and weeks where it is truly that. It's a slog and it's difficult to get through. And I appreciate all that you do to manage all of that, particularly with working through a podcast and likely being in an online course where this material is not exactly easy to tackle. So do know that I appreciate all that you do for this. And please take some time to appreciate yourselves and all that you've done. I look forward to briefly chatting with you all again via podcast about the final exam and wish you all the very best. Take care, everybody.